Penguin Random House Canada presents Rehearsals for Living by Robin Maynard and Leanne Bidasamuse Simpson, read for you by the authors. Forward by Ruth Wilson Gilmore, read by Marcia Johnson. An Afterworld by Robin D.G. Kelly, read by Prince Imponsa.
Forward by Ruth Wilson Gilmore. Spectacles. Robin Maynard and Leanne Bidasamuse Simpson's beautiful book helped me see something I had not quite seen before. For some years now, I've offered a lecture called Meanwhile, Making Abolition Geographies. The lecture's basic principle goes something like this. Abolition is life in rehearsal because freedom is a place. Sometimes the lecture stretches out into several talks, and other times it's a one-off. The content changes, but the structure is consistent. On most occasions, I'll invoke issues specific to where my hosts are located to help listeners see what I'm talking about with some immediacy. So, lectures have referenced the Chicago teacher strike, Brazil's landless workers movement, MST, solidarity with South African self-built communities, water protectors at Standing Rock, nurses' unions building a global movement hospital by hospital and country by country, and so on. Although most of the content in Meanwhile is about relatively recent occurrences, it is a historical geography of the future. In other words, the purpose isn't to document that a specific thing happened, but rather to offer thickly analytical, detailed descriptions of many different ways people arrive at arranging themselves into a social force. Whether in California, or Portugal, or the Black Atlantic, or North America, or South Asia. The social-spatial fights connecting past to present are waged by farm workers or public sector unions, environmental justice activists or school children, long-distance migrants, care workers, households and communities, transport workers, people in prison, detention, and jail, students, sex workers, formerly and currently incarcerated people and their loved ones, indigenous peoples fighting for true decolonization, and people who claim space by occupying land in urban and rural areas of the global South, wherever in the world that may be. Any of those places and more can figure in the historical geographies of the future by making abolition geographies as we go. In short, the purpose of making abolition geographies is to say, see, abolition is presence and also process. Therefore, by moving our attention from place to place, it's possible to sketch out the shape and vitality of an internationalist movement in process of becoming itself. Each segment, then, consists of patiently explaining the conditions under which people who might have set out to do one thing to improve a situation persisted by also, often unexpectedly, doing something else along the way. Each segment lays out a plot of time and space with narrative detail in which people become excited by the possibility of change and surprised by where the dramatic incidents of change in motion might have sent them. They bend courses because practice makes different. Any of the stories can therefore become a model for others. We know that people use elements and provocations from many aspects of life, material and symbolic, to make sense of specific challenges and to assemble impulses into patterns that help, short term or longer, to bend our course through constellations of forces toward eventually becoming constellations ourselves. The Rehearsals for Living you hold in your hands helped me better to see what I've been trying to do with my lectures. Let me explain. While some of the episodes in Meanwhile are big and even noisy, They tend not to be spectacles of the type that, widespread, gripped so much planetary attention in the wake of George Floyd's murder in 2020. Those spectacles matter. We revolt because we cannot breathe, and people take to the streets in the effort to clear up the organized abandonment and organized violence that condense the weight of centuries. All true. And yet, because I've been nearsighted my entire life, I also think of spectacles as eyeglasses, lenses that sharpen focus onto small or blurry or distant details. In combination, these two kinds of spectacles support practical remedy as instruments that help with vision, with the ability to see things we would miss without them. When I read Rehearsals for Living, spectacles in this double sense charted my course as I bent over the expansive meditations gracing every page. And there's a third spectacle I can see here. A constantly unfolding drama whose lines and characters and spaces remain thrillingly unfixed, underlying life in rehearsal. Robin Maynard and Leanne Bedasimose Simpson embody and express how practice makes different. Nobody has to become them as we become us. This necessary book is a model. Through the shared process of two brilliant thinkers, it gifts us clarity to see rehearsals otherwise and elsewhere. Lisbon, November 15th, 2021.
Part 1. On Letter Writing, Commune, and the End of This World. Dear Leanne, about 5 years ago now, I sat down with a copy of your book, as we have always done. I'd planned to flip through the first few pages over my morning coffee. In the end, though, I stayed put, reading almost the whole text in one go, and was suddenly overcome with a strong feeling that I wanted to know you. Your words beckoned me to join you in what you called constellations of co-resistance, constellations that affirmed life and world-making in a time of acute racial violence. We spoke on the phone shortly after. I remember that I was in a Subway restaurant in downtown Montreal, squatting the free Wi-Fi to do a final fact check of some op-ed I'd written. I could barely make out your voice over the very loud and very bad music. I don't recall the details of what we talked about, but I know that I have wanted to chart old and new constellations with you ever since. I've been meaning to write you for a long time, and yet it's hard to know where to begin. So I guess I will start where I'm at. I can't stop doomscrolling the multiple crises of our time. At this moment, I'm preoccupied and filled with dread by the reports of rising temperatures, the just-about-last-chances regularly announced by climate scientists, the continually shelved fact that things must be drastically and immediately shifted if we are to avoid untold suffering. I'm preoccupied with what goes unwritten in so many reports, but what I know in my bones. Some communities' untold suffering will vastly exceed that experienced by others. Some communities have been facing untold suffering for multiple generations. I don't want to live in this preoccupation, in this dread that sometimes comes to visit me and threatens to immobilize. So I suppose this is me reaching out, simply, for a leveling of the grounds beneath my feet, for communion. To help transform the source of this dread into a place from which we can instead plot, conspire, dream, and attend to life otherwise. To attend to the celebration, the preservation of life, without eliding our own community's intimate proximity to death and loss. Talking and thinking with you has always helped me focus on the vitality, the livingness of the traditions that our work emerges from, regardless of what the last several centuries of European atrocities have wreaked on our peoples. Our conversations are a salve against the sharp edges of everyday life. But I don't see you as much as I would like, and the phone is not my medium. So I've decided to write you this letter. I'm writing you a letter even though it feels cringy because I'm shy. I'm writing you a letter even though I may never send it, even though you may never write me back. I'm writing you a letter at the end of this world. From Cyclone Idai in Malawi, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe to Hurricane Dorian in the Bahamas, the devastating forest fires displacing indigenous communities from the Amazon rainforest through to the Mishki-Gogonin Ojibwe Nation in northwest Ontario, our respective communities, that is, Black and Indigenous communities, are collectively positioned on the very forefront of the unfolding catastrophe. It would require a deliberate obfuscation to view the racially uneven distribution of harms that
Sample complete. Ready to continue?